Welcome to BoobTube, where two chicks talk speculative fiction. We're going to be talking about speculative fiction on television, which is why the show's called BoobTube, and, you know, for other reasons. Welcome. This week, we're doing our fall 2012 preview, and without further ado, we're just going to dive in. So, Heather, let's kick off with Sunday night. What do we got?
Oh, Sunday night, we've got three shows, only one of which I'm sitting back going, I cannot wait for it to return. And so we're going to be leading off the night every night on ABC with Once Upon a Time.
Aha!
When Once Upon a Time kicked off last year, I remember seeing a preview for it over the summer and going, I have no idea how they're going to sell that concept week after week. They're fairy tales. Come on. It's not like, you know, it's not like we're going back to the 80s and we're going to be watching The Wonderful World of Disney. Loved it, grew up on it, but they did it. And
I wondered how they were going to make it different from Bill Willingham's wonderful comic book Fables, which it has some tie-ins to.
It does. But they've also done a really good job of, show seems to run on the presumption that you know how the fairy tale runs. You know how it goes. We know Cinderella escapes from the ball and the prince goes after her with her, you know, glass slipper, and they live happily ever after. And we know the prince wakes up Snow White with a kiss and, you know, they live happily ever after. We know how the fairy tale is supposed to go.
Right.
So the producers don't make the mistake of saying, okay, we're just going to retell it entirely. They're still showing you those pieces.
Right.
They're just giving you the rest of the story, like the fact that Snow White could kick butt, which is in and of itself highly entertaining. And other characters, the Mad Hatter, who else did they bring in? They had Rumpelstiltskin. That was another character that when I first started watching it, I was not sure I was going to like him.
They've done a great job with Mr. Gold as Rumpelstiltskin.
They've knocked it out of the park with him, and they have truly made him a Shades of Grey character. Pardon the use of that phrase anymore.
They've done a great job with that, I feel, with all of the characters. I'm not the biggest fan of their version of Prince Charming, but my favorite thing about the show, honestly, is trying to figure out who's who. Whenever a new character shows up, I'm like, who is this guy or girl?
Point the stranger, who turned out to be Pinocchio, which I thought was a really delicious little twist.
It was a nice twist on it. And again, I think that people who have read Fables, they will recognize the nod to Fables in that twist. Let's move on. There's a new show coming out. Well, we should say whether or not we recommend Once Upon a Time.
Hell yes, absolutely. And if you haven't watched the first season, it is available in streaming on Netflix currently. My daughter has been rewatching the entire first season to get caught up in time for the show's debut. I believe it's September 30th is when it's coming back.
Yes, September 30th. Yep, that's it. If you love fairy tales and you love that kind of juxtaposition of fairy tales in the modern world, definitely check it out. It's not one of my drug shows.
I will say this, too. As someone who watches with her daughter, it's a great family show.
Very
you
true.
You can absolutely sit down with your family on a Sunday evening and watch this and get a really great hour of entertainment.
Very true. Actually, I'm a veteran host and I did not introduce us.
They don't care who we are. They just care about the shows.
Well, we should still tell them our names. Her name is Heather. My name is Shireen. And there'll be some kind of write-up below this podcast so you can find out the rest that way. Moving on to 666 Park Avenue, also on Sunday night from ABC at 10 p.m., starring Vanessa Williams, whom we love.
Who is absolutely gorgeous. Really is. She's so gorgeous after all these years. I want to hate her. It's like a Jane Seymour thing. But she can't because, you know, she really is just pretty.
She really is. But you can, like, break into her attic and burn that portrait if you, you know.
That's in the show.
From what we can tell, this show is devil's advocate in a Park Avenue apartment building.
And I think the two biggest pluses to it are the cast. I mean, you've got Vanessa Williams and you've got Terry O'Quinn. John Locke on Lost.
Yeah.
He was on Alias. He was on Hawaii Five-0 last season. He's another character actor who seems to have been around forever, and he's extremely talented.
Definitely.
I can't recommend or say skip it for that one simply because the cast is going to make me watch at least the first episode.
Yeah, we've got to, I'll give it three. You know, that's my rule. Give it three episodes. And I think that the combination of Locke and Williams, the chemistry there is going to be insane. So that's definitely worth giving it a try. Another show that we may or may not give a try is Do No Harm, which is this Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde thing. I think they're taking shades of...
Dexter.
I almost feel like they're taking a little bit of shades of Dexter, but it's mostly Jekyll and Hyde. He's a neurosurgeon. And in the night, he has a alternate personality who does very dirty things. Heather and I talked about this before the show started, and we kind of don't care. But...
Sorry.
You know, we've seen Jekyll by Stephen Moffat, and it was so genius. And if you've never seen it, go watch Jekyll. Wait for The Lion Sleeps Tonight, and you will be happy. But because we're here to help you find good television, we will watch it, and we'll let you know. Monday night.
Doreen says it's worth watching. I'll watch it and let you know what I think. I'm gonna actually abdicate that responsibility on that show. Simply because I've looked at a couple of the previews for it coming up, and they're not grabbing me.
Yeah.
There's not enough there for me to go, yes, I'm going to give up an hour of my time to see if this is good. Now, that said, there have been shows that I've said that about before, and I will freely admit I've gone back later and gone, wow, I was stupid. I really should have watched that. I'm going to say I'm not watching it. Shereen can check it out, and then we'll let you know next time.
Monday night, we've got Revolution. Heather and I have both watched the special premiere.
I'm going to say right now, when I first started watching it, I mean, of course, there was the whole Hunger Games comparison that came up earlier this year when they were first talking about the show.
Yeah.
Three pluses for this show right off the top. J.J. Abrams, Jon Favreau, Billy Burke.
Don't forget about Eric Kripke.
And Eric Kripke. Well, there you go. Four pluses right off the top. So just in the opening credits... I mean, I love Billy Burke as an actor. I think he's a lot of fun. He's the best part of the Twilight movies for me, hands down. Yes, showing my age, people can just live with that. But Eric Kripke is like one of my favorite writers from Supernatural. J.J. Abrams has, I don't think I've seen a project of his that I haven't enjoyed on some level. Not to mention that he does great things with mysteries embedded into a show. Jon Favreau, director of Iron Man, Iron Man 2, as well as playing Happy. And I think he's directing Iron Man 3.
I thought he pulled out of that, but we'll have to check that.
Either way, Iron Man 2, there's big, you know, credentials there. And he's done several other films. I mean, he's a good actor. He's a good director. So right there, that's got a good pedigree. And so that was enough to go, okay, I'm going to watch.
Right. And after you watched, what happened?
I worry that the show is going to fall into the event, flash forward.
Heroes.
Trap. Well, see, Heroes did okay. Heroes actually did okay with their gimmick the first year that they
That's
did it.
That's what I'm saying. But season two, dear Lord.
We could dissect that show.
Well, that was one of our first stamps of WTF-ery.
Yeah, it really was. But I'm looking at this show, and I mean, I'm remembering where I was a year ago, or was it a year ago? Was it 2 years ago when Flash Forward first came on? And I was really excited about the concept because I had actually read the book, and I was really looking forward to it. In the first episode, it was very gripping, it was very moving, and they did all the setup, and you were invested in the characters, you wanted to see where it was going to go.
And then it fell apart.
Yeah, very quickly.
It completely fell apart. Here's my thing about Revolution. For me, it's J.J. Abrams saying, oh, I'm going to make a YA series for television. And it has all the tropes. I mean, it has...
Yeah, fair point. I'll give you that.
Yeah, it has all the tropes, but it does have a few surprises. Here's my problem. And I think it was China Mieville that said it. He said, the difference between Joss Whedon and J.J. Abrams is this. Joss Whedon seems to be one of us, as in geeks. He absolutely, unabashedly adores whatever it is he's creating as a geek. J.J. Abrams seems to be outside of geekdom saying, oh, those geeks are really going to like this. And for me, that's what Revolution felt like. Oh, yeah, those geeks are going to like that. There's the militia. There's the obligatory younger brother who does something stupid. And needs saving. There's the brand of all those we must fear. Then it's on their wrist. I mean, give me a freaking break. You're not going to have a brand that you sometimes might want to hide on your wrist. But I'm giving it 2 more episodes. I feel like it's very predictable and cliche, but I also feel like I'm a sci-fi lover. I'm going to give it a chance. J.J. Abrams sometimes does make me incredibly happy. And like you said, it comes with the pedigree of Eric Kripke and Jon Favreau. Right. Well, I just call him awesome. And so let's see. Watch it. We'll see what we think 3 episodes from now. 2 more episodes from now.
Well, I'll tell you, I'm a little more invested, I think, than 2 more episodes. But mostly because, again, I'm going to say this as a mom. I watched it and said, yeah, it's definitely, you're right. It's definitely YA for kids. And it's something my daughter can watch. So we're going to watch it together. strong points, Billy Burke in the cast. I thought Billy Burke's character, as soon as he came on the screen, the show lit up. It became a much better, much tighter show, much more interesting show. I was much more invested.
Yes, phenomenal fight scene, I must mention.
End of the show, last 5 minutes, best 5 minutes in the entire episode. And I'm going to say that's where they went. I went, okay, they have me now. I definitely be tuning in next week. So that's good. Now, weak points, I'm not really sure about the lead actress. I don't know if she's got the chops to carry off the part she's going to be playing, but this episode's not enough for me to tell because she spends most of it whining. Again, YA, it's okay because that's what we're supposed to be doing.
Yeah, she's got to grow.
Then we've got all the little secrets that are being planted. I do think, honestly, that if you're setting a show 15 years into the future when there is no power, we don't really need a big mystery. We have a big problem.
Right. That's so true.
I hope they don't become too obsessed with the mystery of it all. And of course, then we have the embedded mysteries. Yeah, I think that the strong point, Billy Burke, weak point, not sure about the lead actress. The point that I'm sort of teeter-tottering on, the militia I don't care about so much yet, because if you recall a show called Jeremiah from a few years ago, also on Showtime.
Absolutely.
That show did all of what they're doing in this and more.
Yeah, Luke Perry, Malcolm Jamal Warner.
Thank you. That's who I was trying to remember his name. Like, lovely young man from The Cosby Show. Like, they did such a brilliant job with that. So for me, as I was watching Revolution, I got that feeling of Jeremiah, but it wasn't all, it's like the appetizer for it, not the full meal. So I'm a little more invested at the moment. They've got three episodes to hang on to me.
Let's mention, before we move on, Giancarlo Esposito, who was the magic mirror on Once Upon a Time,
I was trying to place him.
Well, now he's playing the basically horn-rimmed glasses of Revolution. He's opening bad guy. I suspect that we will get more depth into that character, but we'll have to wait and see.
Although I do have to say, I think he had one of the best lines in the whole thing. Before it all, he was an insurance adjuster.
And those skills never go away. That was a really good one.
The other point I think that I'm teeter-tottering on is the young man who will do more research later so I can actually name actors in these particular parts. He was playing, I believe they called him Nate in the show.
Yes, Nate, but the bad boy.
Well, the bad boy that we're not so sure about.
But that's what I'm saying. Well, it's YA, so we're always not so sure about the bad boys.
Bad boys in YA are always extremely good-looking.
And he is that.
He's very good-looking, but I believed him.
I did too. I liked the play with him.
Yes, where I was having some issues with the young actress who was playing the lead. She's going to have the chops for this. I didn't quite believe her in this scenario. But him, I believed.
Okay, well, she didn't bother me. So it's going to be interesting to see. Moving on to Wednesday night, because Tuesday is surprisingly geek-free.
So we're going to move on to Wednesday night. I want to lead off with this one.
Okay.
It's a show that I'm extremely excited about coming on. It's going to be on the CW, and it's called Arrow. Now, Arrow is, of course, about Green Arrow from DC Comics. And as if you will recall, if you watched Smallville, Green Arrow was a huge part of that show in the last 4 years that it was on, played by Justin Hartley, who was hot.
He was great.
Oh, he was perfect as Ollie. He had all the right snark. He had the right relationship with Clark. I mean, you know, again, totally satisfying the geek side of my nature.
Yes.
So when Smallville left after 10 years, we've had sort of a hole for superheroes on the show, on the network, or even on television, really. So Arrow is kind of coming in to fill that hole. It's got a perfect niche spot to go in. They've paired it with Supernatural, which is a match made because, you know, so often when we watch them bring in a new show and they pair it with an older show, they don't fit.
Right.
And you sit back and you're going, I don't understand why you did that. But Arrow and Supernatural, I actually think, are going to go very well hand in hand. And it's starring a young man, or a man named Steve Amnell. It's Amnell, I believe, as Ollie. And it's not a spinoff of Smallville.
I'm really glad about that. Although I would have liked to have seen.
I think that's where we would have run into an issue. I would like to have seen flashbacks to the Smallville people. And of course, they had an extremely complicated and complex history already set up. But by relaunching it as its own show, we're going to get other characters. We're already going to get Deathstroke the Terminator.
Oh, really?
Wade Wilson is going to be a part of this. We're going to see Dinah Lance, who plays the Black Canary, although she's not as the Canary yet.
Okay, so this is pre-Canary. And for those of you who don't read comics, Green Arrow and Canary are basically Catwoman and Batman with a happy ending.
Yes. And so, when she wasn't a villain, she was always a
hero. Well, she's a hero, but I mean their romantic dynamic, not their roles. They have really great romantic chemistry. In the comic books, they do end up together.
And are married, actually, I believe, in the comics.
They are married. Well, I don't know about after the reboot of the DC Universe, but...
At some point, I just lose track. I mean, they were married when I read them. I'm good.
So that's going to be something to watch, the character of Dinah.
They have already talked about the fact that they will also have a Huntress character now. Huntress is extremely interesting because there was a very short-lived show several years ago called Birds of Prey, which is based on a DC Comics.
Written by the genius Gail Simone.
Birds of Prey starred, I don't remember the actor.
All I remember is Shamar Moore because that's all I need to know.
You know, yes, there was somebody playing Barbara Gordon post Batgirl because in the comic books years ago, Batgirl was incapacitated thanks to the Joker.
She was in the Oracle role.
She was the Oracle and she was in a wheelchair. There was a young girl that she was helping to raise named Helena Wayne. Of course, this was also set on Earth 2 where Bruce Wayne married Selina Kyle and they had a daughter named Helena.
So for those of you who don't know, Batman married Catwoman, produced the Huntress.
There you go. And so Barbara was helping to raise the Huntress, and the Huntress was a teen college-age person who was also fighting crime and also featured a Black Canary character.
Yes.
So having both Huntress and Black Canary now in Arrow leads one to sit back and go, when are we going to see Batgirl?
Will we get a Birds of Prey vibe, which we would all be quite happy with?
Yeah, because they have a very, and for a show that is extremely testosterone fueled, based on all the previews I've seen for it, it has a very strong feminine component, and I'm very happy about that. So,
okay, and from a strong feminine component to a strong masculine component, Heather's excited about Arrow, a show that we're both excited about is Supernatural. But we're going to skip a show called Neighbors because it looks goofy. You know, if it turns out to be good, we'll let you know. But Supernatural, in its in its seventh season, CW, October 3rd, in its eighth season.
Yeah, we're in eighth season.
Are we eight?
Eight.
Okay, we're in our eighth season.
I'm checking that while we're talking. Keep going. I do believe we are eight seasons, though.
Okay, well, CW, 9 p.m. Wednesday night, starts October 3rd. There are no characters like Sam and Dean. And we have to be honest and tell you that
we are in season eight.
We are in season eight. Okay, I can't count fingers because, Heather was holding up eight fingers and I was like, what does that mean? Is it a countdown? One thing that Heather definitely wants to make an announcement about the new showrunner. So I'm going to let her take that over because we can tell you that we were very disappointed in season seven. We won't get into it because the show will run for about 6 hours.
Jeremy Carver, who is one of my favorite Supernatural writers, and if you will recall from earlier seasons, if you have ever been a fan, that they had the Oracle character, the one who was the, what did they call him?
Carver Edlin, based off of Jeremy Carver and Ben Edlin.
Yeah, but what was his title? He was like a
prophet.
Prophet, thank you. They called him a prophet. But he was also named after these two writers. Well, they announced at the end of season seven that Jeremy Carver, who is no longer with the show, was coming back to the show and would be taking over as executive producer and head writer. And you couldn't have made me happier if you'd said Kripke was coming back.
Yeah, I have to agree.
I am going to go there for just a minute. I was one of those people who looked up at the end of season five and said, okay, they're done. They have told their story. They could stop it right here and we're good. And everyone was like, no, we have to have another season. And yeah. Okay, so now here we are 2 years later, and I'm kind of glad it's still on because I do love the boys.
And they've been unrecognizable for the past 2 years. I mean, they haven't been the guys that we know. And we're not talking about character development, folks. We're talking about these were two different dudes.
Yeah, it really was like being in an alternate realm. Like they went through that mirror one too many times. But with Jeremy Carver being back in control, having this, you know, the show return, it comes back on October
3rd.
Yes. So that's the night that Arrow debuts, followed very quickly by Supernatural. I think it's a 2 hours that can't be missed on Wednesday nights.
Yeah.
I will definitely be tuning in with high hopes.
Very high hopes. If you've never watched Supernatural, you really should catch up on it. Lovers of Good Omens by Neil Gaiman and Terry Pratchett will absolutely adore this show. It really runs like a comic book, starting off with urban legends and then developing into this epic show. Watch it. You'll love Sam and Dean, whether you're male or female. It's good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so then on Thursday night, I'm not going to bother with Last Resort. It's a submarine show, Shades of Denzel Washington. Okay, great. I'm not going to bother with Anne Heche and her new kind of like a Joan of Arcadia biblical prophet thing, but as a comedy, Heather and I don't care. What?
Well, and I don't like it when they really like to just go off. I mean, it's a comedy. It's going to mock religion. It's going to mock a lot of things. And I mean, unless it's exceptionally brilliant and delivered well, and we'll hear about that if it is, it's just not my thing.
So here's the block that we are interested in. You can call us girly if you want to. We don't care because we can kick your ass. Starting off with The Vampire Diaries at 8 p.m. on the CW. It premieres October 11th.
That's right. And they are back for season 4. I have to say, in all honesty, Vampire Diaries is one of those rare shows that I watched the very first episode of the very first season and was like, huh, well, that's not bad.
Yeah.
I'll watch the next one. And I watched the second episode and I was like, it's still really not that bad. It's actually kind of interesting. I'll keep watching. And it was by the fourth episode of the first season that I truly became invested in it. And it was never that it didn't not interest me. It took four episodes to really hook me in and keep me in. And now it has over 3 years become the show that I absolutely have to sit down and watch on Thursday nights. My phone gets turned off. People are, unless there's blood or bone showing, people should not be bothering me when this show is on because it has all the right elements. Now, that said, I think the first two seasons were brilliant, and I think they went a little uneven in their third season.
Agreed.
I believe that there were episodes in the third season that had Heather staring at the screen going, what? I'm sorry, what?
And places where they seem to play with their own continuity, which they've kind of fixed it, but they went off the continuity rails for a minute, and then they say, oh, no, we didn't mean that.
And it is. And I think there were places where, as fans want them to go and then they don't go, or then they tease you and then they don't go there anyway. And then they tease you some more. And then they wonder why their fans get really, really angry with them for the choices that they make. But now, all of that said, I am going to be, spoiler alert, pay attention if you have not watched the show. This series is based off of books by L.J. Smith that were written in the early 1990s, long before Buffy the Vampire Slayer, long before Twilight, long before Charlene Harris wrote her Suki books, and were some of the very first vampire YA that I had ever read. So it is not a Twilight knockoff. But that said, in the books, Elena becomes a vampire. Now, for 3 years, Elena has been human on this show. And at the conclusion of last season, in the very last moments of the episode, Elena is killed and she awakens and that she has vampire blood in her system. So the premise for season 4 has already been set in that we will be dealing with Elena's transition. And for those who do not understand, the mythology on the show says that once a vampire, if you die with vampire blood in your system, you will come back to life. But you have 24 hours to drink human blood and complete the transition or you die. And that's where this, the season is going to pick up. We've got a whole lot of other problems going on out there. We've still got the love triangle between Damon and Stefan and Elena. And although Elena chose Stefan in the final episode, I actually don't buy that. I think it was a little bit of a cop-out, which is where I have my issues with the show, because she also thought they were all about to die. And right. This is probably not going to be a very popular opinion with people, but in those last few minutes of the episode, they have been dealing with the originals all throughout the third season, the originals, which are considered the source of the vampire bloodline.
The first family of vampires.
Thank you. So the first family of vampires. And they discovered rather by accident that if you kill one of the originals, which they did, one of the brothers, it kills every vampire that he created and every vampire in that vampire's line. So they don't know which of the originals are the forefathers of Damon and Stefan's line, which most of the vampires that we know and love in that little group, except for Tyler, were created from Damon's blood or out of Damon, Stefan, and Catherine's line. Now, and this will also include Elena because they have made it very clear that the blood used for Elena was Damon's.
Okay.
But there was a vampire hunter that was created to kill the originals, and he managed to stake Klaus, the big bad, for most of, second season and has been a real pain and then third season. But they all believe that now that Klaus was dead, he'd been staked, he was burned, their whole line was going to die. So in those last few minutes when Elena, she was suiciding. Hmm. And if they address that in opening episodes, I think it will make for a stronger show because Elena has had survivor's guilt from the beginning. She's watched everyone around her die or become a vampire or become a werewolf or become a witch and then again die. She has huge survivor skill. I truly do believe that it was in those last few minutes that it was her choice to die. And she didn't expect to come back.
We'll see. The things that I will say are this. It is not predictable, as some people have complained about. You never know what's going to happen on this show. I will also say that it's not a girly show, as witnessed by the scores of men who watch and enjoy the show. So guys, you can get into this. This is another show that we will ramble on about. Let's talk about what it leads into. And it's a new series called Beauty and the Beast. 9 p.m. October 11th is when it debuts. They're kind of calling it a reboot of the 1980s classic Beauty and the Beast starring Linda Hamilton and Ron Perlman, which was a really well done series.
One of my all-time favorite shows.
The Beast had a kind of lion vibe to him. They all lived in the underground and the subway system. It was New York, if I'm not mistaken. Am I right?
And it was actually one of the primary writers for the show for many years was George R.R. Martin.
Well, and so there you go. So, you know, it had a lot of...
It actually had a beautiful poetry to the entire thing. In addition to Vincent's erudite readings and the way he would communicate with Catherine, he was so isolated from the world because his deformities, because he looked like a beast, would keep him isolated. People were afraid of him. And he was also extremely strong. He had claws. He had the ability to kick butt. And yes, it had some of the procedural element because Catherine in that original series was a assistant district attorney.
Yes.
And so
complexity. That's the word I was looking for.
Complexity. There you go. So there was a lot of that. I mean, it did have something of a little bit of a formula, but it also had a lot of layers because these were two people who, you know, he saved her life and they became friends during her recovery. And then they stayed in touch because she lived above, he lives below. And yet, they wanted to be together, and it was only on for about 3 years. And the first 2 years, of course, are the best. The third year did take a bit of a nosedive. Part of that was because Linda Hamilton was exceptionally pregnant when they were filming it, and she ended up leaving the show. So they had to kill off the character of Catherine, which, of course,
killed the show.
That ain't gonna happen.
Right. It definitely killed the show, and it's an absolute great time to bring back a show like that. As a matter of fact, if the original was released today, it would be a monster hit. This new version, we're not so sure about. The Beast is not, you know, he has a scar on his face. And apparently he does shapeshift in some way. But
he's supposed to be a werewolf. I actually think he's supposed to be a werewolf.
He's supposed to be. And you know, I'm just not as interested in that. You know, the scar on his face and shifting into a werewolf. Because he's not inside that body all the time, which is what makes her love for him so deep, is the fact that he's always in that body. Making him a werewolf with the scar, yeah, it's kind of sexy. So what? We do like...
Kristen Crook.
I do like her a great deal. In the preview, there's a fight scene in the subways that's pretty great.
See, from Smallville, we know she can do the action sequence. Yeah. Here's my thing, too. Linda Hamilton's one of those actresses who can communicate emotion with just the way her eyes move.
Yeah.
And I don't think Kristen Crook quite has that capability. Now, that said... This is also based on the fact that she played a character on Smallville that I didn't like because I thought we spent too much time with Lana. Lana was okay in the beginning. She got a little pain, you know, later. But physically, the physicality of it, she can totally handle the role. Okay. And if they do the Beast thing right with this guy, I mean, we don't really know what he's going to do. I mean, everything I've read and heard is he's going to actually be a shapeshifter. He's the product of a military experiment. And that's why he faked his death and blah, 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 blah. We've got a bunch of conspiracies. Yeah, nobody can hear about it.
Ugh, gosh.
Yes. I mean, it's got a lot of tropes. But again, this is a YA kind of show. And that what they've done is they've taken a high concept, or no, I wouldn't even say high concept. They've taken what was considered an adult series back in the 80s, and they're retooling it for a YA series. And it's got a lot of potential. Now, it's taking over from The Secret Circle, which completely fell apart for me last year.
So it'll be interesting to see. That thudding sound that you guys heard was me stabbing myself in the chest. Because, ugh, military experiment. Yay. Boo. Okay, so.
Gotta say it. They do it, so.
Well, yeah. Person of Interest is also on Thursday night. I do not watch that show. Do you?
I actually do not watch the show. However, I have had several friends who look at me and want to strangle me because I do not watch the show because it is so incredibly brilliant. It has unfortunately suffered for me in the fact that it is on a very jam-packed night. I have put it on my list of things that I've, when it's available on DVD, I will be getting it from Netflix to watch the first season. So I'm going to DVR this season and just keep it like in the background until I've watched the first season. I want to see if it holds my interest. That person of interest, if it holds my interest, we'll see. So it could be mid-season before I get to it, though.
Okay, so stick around. We'll let you know how we feel about it. So jumping on to Friday night, I think if we just touch on Touch, Touch is cute. It's kind of family-oriented, but it's not a great show. Watch it, don't watch it. It won't change your life. Fringe, however, is a show that both Heather and I love. It is another J.J. Abrams show. It started off very, very shaky for me, and then it blossomed. And I'm a person that loves my science fiction with a liberal dose of fantasy, and Fringe will definitely do this for you. There are alternate realities. There are real and fatal consequences to actions. These characters are constantly in danger, but they're brilliant, they're quirky, they're flawed. It's a very, very good show. So this is one.
You really should not try and watch this season just from here. This is one of those series that, to its credit, it's brilliant.
Yes.
But to its detriment, it has to be seen in order. You've got to go back, get first season, and start from there. I think it's 100% worth the effort.
Yes.
It truly is. And if you have a squeamish stomach, there are some episodes you should probably warn yourself about because it has an X-Files component to it in many ways in some of the gross factors.
With better effects because of the time period. So it's gross. It's more gross. I don't know if grosser is a word. Anyway, it's more gross. But, you know, for the geeks out there, it's got Leonard Nimoy. What else do you need?
And John Noble, who the man deserves an Emmy for his portrayal of Walter. The thing about Fringe, for anyone who's on the fence and is not sure what they're looking for, Fringe is what I would actually call a bit of a mashup.
Yes.
In the sense that it offers you a procedural component. It offers you a strong internal mythology.
Yes.
It pulls from its own internal mythology for storylines.
Yes. It's a perfect blend of sci-fi and fantasy, I think.
It is an excellent blend of sci-fi and fantasy. It has family components. It has
romance.
Who you are. It has a romance. It actually has a romance that will make your head hurt.
Yeah, it'll drive you insane. But for the men out there, it's not so romancy that it overtakes the show.
It's actually got a lot of action. It's got a lot. It's thoughtful. And I think at the end of the day, I think that's the best thing you can say. They think about the effects and when you do something. The whole idea of Fringe is this is science. It's on the fringe.
Yes.
And it's, is this really possible?
Yes.
And the scary part is some of the stuff that they do, and this is actually the ultimate gift of science fiction. You hear about some of these things and you're going, yeah, no, that's never going to happen. And then you watch it in the show and you're like, yeah, okay.
That's possible.
I can see how that might happen.
Right. Definitely, we're saying we recommend it. Definitely watch it. And one of the greatest factors of the show is the character development. These characters grow, which is, I think, something that doesn't happen as well on Grimm on the same time, same night, but this time on NBC. It already premiered Monday, August 13th. We've had about half a season of Grimm, I think, at this point. Grimm is...
Last year.
Pardon?
They've had like 4 episodes now for second season, and we had a whole season last year.
Yes. And Grimm is a procedural, but it features basically the Grimm storybook of fairy tales. But they're not given the classic names that we know them by. They're actually given genuses. They're categorized as species. And the Grimm line, descended from the brothers Grimm, police all of these fairy tales that are out there in the world. When they go bad, they kill them. And they've become the boogeymen of the fairy tale world, which I find is very interesting. Very, very similar to the Richard Matheson book, I Am Legend, the novel I Am Legend, as opposed to the film. So, Grimm is, it's a pretty good show. It's not world-altering. Some people relate it to Angel and Buffy. It's just really not that good. But it is fun to DVR for when you come in after your Friday night out or when your kids fall asleep. Yeah, it's something to watch.
See, I didn't like it. I watched 4 episodes. I couldn't get into it. I tried. I wanted so much to like the show, but I just really, I didn't. I kept saying I wanted to like it, and so I would watch it. And I didn't hate it. I just didn't love it. I was very neutral. So I had several episodes DVR'd for months.
And I
never watched them. Not because I thought, oh, I don't want to watch it. I just never, eh. And I think that's, I'm sorry to say that. So for me, it won't be a toss up between Fringe and, Grimm, it'll be Fringe.
It'll be Fringe, yeah. And it, again, it fails in character development and it fails in romance. It really does fail there. Where it's interesting is in the action and in its imagination, the way that it presents all these fairy tale creatures. But there's two more things that we'll get into before we close out this preview. It's been a much longer preview than expected, but that's because Heather and I do really love television. And we're pop culture vultures, so we know a lot. There's a lot to talk about.
Pop culture vultures.
We're going to say goodbye to one of our mutual favorite shows, which is Eureka. It was on the Sci-Fi Network, or as I unaffectionately call it, SIFI. For about, what, 7 years, I think?
7 years, what worked out to be, quote, 5 seasons, although arguably two of those seasons were broken up into halves.
Yes.
Because you had 3, and then 3-5, 4-5, then 5. Yeah, I would like to have just a very severe geek moment of silence for a brilliantly written, brilliantly executed.
Brilliantly cast.
I actually can't say enough about that cast.
Mm-hmm.
Very few shows would I look at and say they had the perfect cast for those roles. You know, so-and-so might have been better. But no, this show, nobody would have been better. Who they chose for those parts, they became those characters. They were perfect. They were flawed. Even the guest actors, I mean, because they had some tremendous guest stars over the years, from Francis Fisher to James Callis from Battlestar Galactica.
He was fantastic.
There. Michael Shanks from SG-1, a personal fave. He was a guest star on there. Will Wheaton showed up. Felicia Day.
Was delightful.
Was really, if you could can that quirkiness, particularly for that character, you'd make a fortune. I can't say enough about it. I can't say enough about how much I loved it. I loved the internal continuity. I loved the fact that they played with time. They played with dimension. They played with science. But at the heart of it, it was a small town. With these friends and family, and these people mattered more to them than all of scientific development in the world and the sacrifices they were willing to make. I mean, I cried in that last episode because it was going away. And they
made you care. For those of you who are not familiar with Eureka, it was all of the great scientific minds in the entire world who lived in a small government secret town.
Somewhere like Oregon, Washington.
And develop the next great technology. Because they were all these brilliant minds and scientists, they often messed up. They often created situations that would destroy the world or the town or 5 or 6 people, but in really horrific ways. In comes Sheriff Jack Carter, who was a
fabulous Colin Ferguson.
Colin Ferguson.
So underappreciated, I think, overall. Just because, I mean, I know it was a sci-fi show, but the things that he had to do in his role as Jack and in the various spin-offs of Jack and in the doppelgangers of Jack and in the clones of Jack he's fantastic.
He did a great job. They did this wonderful juxtaposition of Sheriff Jack Carter, who's an everyday guy with a great mind for police work, and these super geniuses, and how he was able to simplify things in such a way that he solved their problems. Their thinking was so high-minded that they often couldn't solve their own problems. But in him using what for them was an elementary intellect, he would break things down so simply that he'd fix it. He was the ultimate Occam's razor.
Yes, he really was. He was the perfect Occam's razor for them, too.
Yes, and it works so well. So watch this show. Get it on DVR. Get it on, I think it's on Netflix.
All the seasons are on Netflix for watching and streaming.
Watch this show because from beginning to end, it is wonderful. You will care. You will laugh. You will go, how the hell did that happen? And it's a good time.
And I will say that it's also one of those shows that holds up. There are very few shows over the years that I have watched where I can literally go back and rewatch it from beginning to end. I could probably name them on one hand. I think there's 5 total that I've ever seen that I can watch 10 years later.
And it's still great.
Yeah, and it's still great.
Continuity held up. And I'm a big continuity person. And they kept their continuity from beginning to end.
Yes, they did.
Another show super dependent on continuity and wrapping up our week is Saturday night, and we're going into Doctor Who. This is the 11th Doctor?
Actually, I have to say, we didn't talk about it, and it just occurred to me. but I'm going to interject this before we get back into the Doctor.
Yes.
I need to talk about it in our next show will be the show Haven, which will also be on Friday nights on the Sippy Network.
Oh.
Haven is a paranormal version of Eureka, and I'm going to leave you with that thought, and then we're going to come back and we'll talk about that next week.
Yeah.
And on to Doctor Who. This is our 11th Doctor, I believe.
11th Doctor, yeah. Yeah, Haven is so Stephen King. Let me just say that. But yeah, 11th Doctor, Doctor Who. We're in our third season with the genius Stephen Moffat as showrunner. And I will say that Stephen Moffat, who has written some of the most brilliant episodes, which I might be overusing brilliant, but it's true, of Doctor Who ever. If you've never watched Doctor Who in your life, there is one episode that you can watch, and it is called Blink. It is completely standalone, and it is amazing. Stephen Moffat as showrunner, however, he brought in a new doctor, a gentleman by the name of Matt Smith, who actually does look like an alien. He has no eyebrows, and he has fingers that are the length of rulers. It's a very interesting guy to look at. He also brought in a new companion. The doctor travels with companions. Her name is Amy Pond. I like to call her Amy Pond scum because I hate her with a passion unparalleled. And I'll tell you why. The joy of Doctor Who is in the fact that the companion and the doctor bring out the very best in one another. They grow together. They have amazing adventures, and they use their wits and being intrepid to fight all manners of ills and to set the universe right, and they pay for it. I mean, they leave bodies behind. In this new version of the doctor, I find the companion to be so unbelievably flat that it flattens the rest of the show out, because that dynamic between the doctor making her better and her making him better does not exist. And what happens is we get the same exact show over and over again. And I'm going to let Heather tell you what she thinks.
They are currently airing series 7 here. Three things as far as Doctor Who goes. It used to be we were seeing it on huge delay from Britain, because it is a British produced and British filmed, and it's a British product.
It's the BBC.
It is the BBC. So I being something of an expat, or the child of an expat, I should say, I enjoy having British television. I've always enjoyed British television. Each Doctor always brings something new and different to the show. Now, I'm only caught up through season 6. I have not seen any of 7 as yet. I have it all in the DVR, so I have to catch up. I have not been dramatically impressed by Matt Smith as the Doctor. I don't buy him. I don't really see in him. The thing about the Doctor is that this is a Time Lord, a timeless man, a man who has seen everything and been everywhere and done everything. And particularly after the Christopher Eccleston incarnation, which when he played the 9th Doctor, I think that was back in 2005.
Yes. They kicked out the new Who.
That would be when his entire race died, and he is now the last one of his race. So there's always an intrinsic sadness to the Doctor that is accompanied by an intrinsic madness. And David Tennant, who is an absolutely brilliant actor, and I think maybe this is where I think Matt Smith suffers and these last two seasons, because I've actually enjoyed a lot of the episodes. I'm not fond of the companion. There are actually two companions. There's Amy Pond, as Shireen was saying, who's a very lovely young woman. I don't really care for her character.
Right.
And then her husband, which this is kind of unusual to have a husband and wife as the companions, because usually you always see the companion as kind of a romantic interest, but not really.
Yeah, they started off kind of like Rose and Mickey, but then it became clear that these two were actually in love. And over the course of their 3 seasons, they have gotten married.
You know, so they've gotten married, and so they've done that. And so I think Rory, who is the gentleman companion, I prefer him to in huge ways. But I find it disturbing to me to be watching an episode of Doctor Who and find that I'm more interested in watching what Rory is doing than what the Doctor is doing.
There's that, too. And I'm disturbed by the fact that I'm envisioning ways that Amy Pond might die.
I can take her or leave her. There were times when Rose got on my nerves, too.
Yeah,
I mean,
but
my
companions
are
Donna and Martha.
Yes. But see, I hated Donna when she first showed up.
The dizzy Donna. I absolutely agree. And Rose bothered me at times, but they've all had their charm. And I think that the main problem with Amy Pond is the chick is charmless. She has these expressions that go from dumb to dumber. There's nothing there. It's completely vapid. And the problem with both this doctor and this companion is they constantly look in the screen and tell us how brilliant Amy Pond is, but we never see it. This doctor's constantly shaking his fist at his enemies and saying, I am the doctor, fear me. But he's never doing anything that proves the greatness of it. He's basically just living off of the genius of all the doctors that came before without adding anything of his own. And I think that's a flaw in Stephen Moffat's version of the doctor. I mean, he had that lovely episode by Neil Gaiman, the doctor's wife, which was...
That was actually probably one of the best episodes I've ever seen with Matt Smith in it.
Right, because without Amy there, Matt Smith is a better doctor when Amy's pond isn't flattening him out, because there's no challenge with that character. But in The Doctor's Wife, written by Neil Gaiman, as I said, a Hugo Award-winning episode, if I'm not mistaken...
Yeah, I think so.
You really get to see more of the depth that we've come to expect from Doctor Who. Let's not kid ourselves. It's a campy show. But it is a campy show that has such depth and really does explore humanity and what we are capable of human beings, from our very best to our very worst.
For a campy show, let's be frank. It's older than Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
In 1963, it ran continuously through the mid-90s, mm-hmm. where it had a bit of a break, and then it returned in 2005. I think they have something like 770 episodes. They've had 11 doctors. I lost count of how many companions over the years. And it's a show that has reinvented itself time and time and time again. And everybody...
And it works.
Doctor. Yeah. Everybody... Well, it always hurts. I mean, when we lost Christopher Eccleston after just 1 year, I couldn't believe that they were doing that, but I also understood why.
Oh, I said it works. Sorry.
But it does work. Well, it does hurt.
It does hurt too, when you lose great doctors. I mean, I loved Tom Baker, which everyone will know as the scarf, the stripy scarf doctor.
The ginger guy, the ginger hair with the curls in the scarf. Yes. And then my favorite was always Peter Davison.
Yeah, he was great.
So, you know, everybody's got a favorite. Well, actually, I will say right now, my favorite is David Tennant.
You know, David Tennant and Chris Eccleston were singular, really wonderful in both their portrayals. I did not think I would like Tennant after Eccleston, because Eccleston was amazing, but Tennant was equally amazing, and we had him for so much longer.
30 episodes since we had David Tennant as the doctor, and I never failed to look at him and go, I miss David Tennant.
Absolutely.
After 30 episodes, I'm still Miss David Tennant. Now, that said, I still watch the show.
Because there's moments.
And there are great moments, and there are sad moments, and there are moments, and there are moments where I just sort of shake my head and I wonder how much, I mean, you know, it's funny, when I grew up, Doctor Who was a kid's show. It was very much a kid's show. My parents used to laugh. We would watch it. It was a children's show. We were, you know, that was for the kids to watch. And in Britain, it's a kid's show. Adults watch it. There are millions of adults who watch it. But the marketing for Doctor Who itself is towards children.
Well, not anymore. I don't.
No, they've actually changed, but they still, it is still considered kids programming in many ways.
Because they really think to address the kids market, they did that offshoot with, what's her name?
Oh, may she rest in peace.
Yes.
She played Sarah Jane.
Sarah Jane and her son became the kids' version of the doctor, because they there was that hole as the doctor became more adult.
Yeah, you would have the Sarah Jane show, her Sarah Jane Adventures, I think is what they call it. That was the kids, the lower grades.
Yes.
Then you had Torchwood, which was like your adult, raunchy version.
Yes, very.
And then we had Doctor Who, but Doctor Who has stayed in the YA new adult area. It's not going too adult, it's not going too young. Hmm. So it's staying middle of the road. I mean, but it's the, you know, they dial it back. It's about the adventure. So we could go on at length with this. I mean, I will say it's on Saturday nights. It's on BBC. I believe it airs on BBC America here. It is worth watching. I've never wondered when we would get a new doctor before, but I do wonder that now. I actually kind of hope we get a new one sometime soon, but I have a feeling we won't. And maybe eventually Matt Smith will grow on me. I mean, it can take time. I was not the biggest Tom Baker fan. That took for years.
Oh, blasphemy.
Yeah, I did not like Tom Baker as much. I was actually much more of a Peter Davison fan, and I think that's actually why I was a big Peter Davison fan, is because I really didn't like Tom Baker.
You speak such madness, woman! Dare you!
So yeah, there's, you know, everybody's got a favorite doctor, everybody's got a preference. It's worth watching, it's fun to watch, and for the most part, it is safe for kids.
That's true, although there are some scary moments. I mean, the Weeping Angels will scare the out of anybody.
The Daleks scared the crap out of me when I was a child.
I know people who are still afraid of the Daleks.
Actually, I'm more afraid of the Cybermen. Now, the Weeping Angels...
The Cybermen I'm scared of, because yeah. that's a bad transition. And I'm scared of the Weeping Angels because I am a black woman. I do not want to get sent back into the wrong time period, people. I really don't. There's a block of modern history that I don't want any parts of. I do have it on good authority that Amy Pond will die. And about half the people listening are like doing happy dances right now. The other half don't care. I think, Heather, I'm going to be very interested in finding out how you feel about Matt Smith with a new companion. And they have introduced the new companion in a very interesting way, which I will not spoil because Heather hasn't watched it. So we'll keep you guys up to date. And really, that's our show. We're the Boob Tubers. We're going to get into a lot of fun features in the coming weeks as we dive into these shows. A lot of our shows will be much shorter, will be a lot quicker. We're open to you guys sending us emails. We'll have an email address for you. We'd like to know what you want to talk about and like to hear about. We're going to have some very cool guests on. So stay with us and grow with us. Bye.
Bye.